Welcome to Life Off Screen with Dan and Peggy Ruppel. Thank you for joining us. If you're enjoying this podcast, do us a favor and subscribe to the show and give us a rating. Life Off Screen is produced by Master Media International. And to find out more about Master Media or the Life Off Screen podcast, visit us at lifeoffscreen.com. And now, here's Dan and Peggy.
Welcome. Today, you are in for a treat. Peggy and I are so excited for our guests today. They are longtime friends, Tim and Heather Hawkins.
Tim is in the house.
Tim is in the house.
This guy.
You may know Tim either from his concerts, from his CDs, his DVDs, but you also might know him from all of his viral videos. He did the homeschool family. The first one I remember was Cletus Take the Reel.
Yes.
He did yoga pants. He did the Chick-fil-A jingle. That, you know, he does these parodies and you just can't even think of the original song anymore. It's always his funny lyrics over it. They're a dear couple and we're so happy to be able to have this conversation with them.
And God has blessed us to have a front row seat on their life and their career. And it's been remarkable. So I know you've enjoyed him. You're going to get a window into what he's doing now. And we think this is going to be a great time.
So let's just jump in with Tim and Heather Hawkins. All the way from St. Louis,
yay!
Tim and Heather Hawkins.
Hi, you guys. Hey, Dan and I were just saying that if this web series goes south, we kind of have you guys to blame.
Yeah.
Because we actually called you and said, we're thinking about doing this thing. Are we idiots?
No.
And you said?
Go for it.
You can't say something nice.
That's for sure. No, I remember that because,
start a thing.
Because as soon as COVID hit, we started, you know, we kind of formed our list of people we wanted to Zoom. And we reached immediately out to you guys and said, let's Zoom. And we had a great talk. And then I think it was you, Peg, that first said, we're thinking about doing this as a show. And you...
be honest.
Yeah, so we're going to... If this really just tanks, man...
Thanks.
You're off our friendship list.
Oh, well, I didn't know it was conditional. I wouldn't have signed up.
We, in our history of the company, the comedy company, we get the best piece of advice and the worst piece of advice ever. And the best was from Dan. The worst piece was from a guy who told us we can't make money on the internet. And then Dan tells us, make as much content as you can and just put it out there. And we just said, okay, we didn't know what we were doing. And
that's when we didn't know what YouTube was. And you told us.
Yeah, you're like, well, yeah, just start cranking.
And we had a bad experience with MySpace. So we were like, I don't know if we want to do the YouTube thing. But we did.
Yeah. And the reason I did it isn't because I'm so brilliant, although I am.
Yes.
Okay, maybe not.
If you can't say
maybe
something nice.
But no, I remember that vividly. You and I, Tim, had met a few times prior to that year. At the CCA, but I the 2005, I was given the keynote and I was telling about how there's this new thing that's coming called YouTube. It's a website that you can put your videos on. And you and your brother came up immediately afterwards and said, let's do lunch. And the reason I thought that you, of all people, were so perfect for video content was because, first of all, you do musical parodies.
Yes.
Which are ripe for doing not only the parody of the song, but a parody of the video.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but also I knew you had this kind of improvisational, loose, really, you know, acting chops within the comedy thing. So I knew you would translate really well to video.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to give you the credit. First of all, you're so talented, but also between you and your brother, Todd, you guys really just went for it.
I think it was Anita Renfro and you were the two that it's like it landed.
Yeah.
And both of you took off.
Yeah.
Anita was cool because I remember back in when we were doing this and started to making videos. I mean, I would come up with an idea like, well, I can't really do that because it's more of a woman's idea. So I'm walking through Walmart and I remember it was, she did a song with, it was Carrie Underwood's Before He Cheats.
Yeah. About the diet.
And I was thinking Before He Eats, you know, maybe next time I'll think before I eat. I'm like, Anita. So I just call her and I leave a message. I'm like, okay, here's the song, blah, blah, blah.
Here's the idea.
I run with it. And the next year I see her in concert with that video up on her screen.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then
but, she called you.
And she's given me one or two just
one big one. It was
the idea was I'll clean up for you.
Yes, I'll clean up for you is a big hit, and so many people will come up to him like that is our favorite. Mm-hmm. We love that song so
yeah. Yeah.
And that came from her.
Yeah.
But that's the thing about the internet is you're synergizing with other people. I mean, the first mm-hmm. video that I had that was viral, I didn't even make it. It was some kid who made a stick figure video of a song, and it went crazy, and they were like,
you know. Yeah, that went to a million.
So it's the power of the fans or people who react yeah. and yes. make their own thing from your material.
It just keeps multiplying.
And it's just really powerful, you know.
When we watch you, it's like the parodies seem like they're a lot of fun for you.
Well, you're giving the audience a lot of reason to enjoy it. Either they like the song you're parodying, they like yeah. the work you're doing, they like the voice that you're doing, they just like the energy of the music. It's just a lot of, you know, plus I, with doing audiences of all ages, it helps. The music just adds energy. And really, I was always more inspired by music than comedy, really.
Yeah.
Wow.
I wanted the comedy show to feel like, you know, a rock concert or something. So
awesome.
We have to do our favorite song. Like, don't parody my favorite song.
Because you'll ruin it. You'll ruin it.
I think of the parody all the time.
Yeah.
You can't unlearn the new lyrics, you know. It's really
our friends would go to the grocery store and they'd play the real song on the thing and the kids are like, they're stealing Tim's song.
That's what they think.
Yeah.
You know? That's what they think.
Think how bad it'd be if you parody somebody's wedding song. It's like, oh, you just ruined the the memory of my wedding.
Yeah.
You know. I remember we were having dinner at Downtown Disney. We used to be able to do that once a year or twice a year. That?
Remember those days?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Loved it. Loved
and you brought
it.
Your kids. Outside.
Yeah.
Your friends.
Yeah.
Your
right.
And I always used to feel for Spencer and Olivia, Levi and Jackson, because they were so stinking patient because they had to come leave the park, have dinner with us at Downtown Disney. And then it's almost like we're wanting to dismiss them, but you're making them stay.
I know, but they were used to that throughout any of our travels anyway.
Yeah.
They're good kids.
They're great. They're great kids. Yeah. But I remember the last time we were at Downtown Disney, this is probably late summer, early fall, something like mm-hmm. that. And you were talking about how you felt the Lord was kind of leading you January 1st, kind of shut it down, at least for a while, maybe permanently, maybe God was calling you to something else. Mm-hmm. And then after, of course, what timing?
Yeah.
You know, because, it would have been a forced sabbatical had you not put everything in gear. Yeah. So you were kind of ready for it.
Yep. Yeah, all the times in your life you feel regret, feel like you're in the wrong place, the wrong time.
Yeah.
And they say a broken clock is right twice a day.
Yeah.
But, it had to be God. It was just like where we knew we were wrapping up at the beginning of 2019. I'm going to take 2020 off. And it was a year for our people to kind of find work, you know.
Wow. Yeah. And,
it was still difficult, but think of, if we would have kept going, I mean,
it would have been a disaster.
I just feel like we averted something really huge. And and man, because really this year was just about taking rest, being restful. And and it's kind of added to that, like that relief of knowing that, it worked out that way.
And we're especially grateful because I know on Heather's bucket list was going to Sundance with us someday.
Oh, and that worked out, didn't it? It was so good.
It did.
And we got to do it. It was
my bucket list.
You guys were like so pro.
That was great. It was so great. How amazing it was, like on your end of it with the group and everything. Windrider, right? That's the name.
Windrider Forum. Yeah. That's right. At Sundance.
What were some of your takeaways from being there at Sundance?
Wow.
That movies are doable.
Yeah.
But they're also not just some side project. It's a commitment. It's a full time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Probably more than full time commitment. Mm-hmm. These people are sold out to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot of hard work, but they have to become from a place of passion. They have to be passion projects.
It's refreshing to know when people have that humility. They've gone into the real world and they know how it really works. Yeah. So they're not just
Yeah, they weren't
all start, you know, head in the clouds, is they have a realistic idea of what it takes.
Yes.
And that's pretty refreshing.
That was refreshing.
Yeah.
And as a storyteller, I could see you fitting into film. Who knows if that was God's doing, but wow, it's an option to you, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
Yeah. Well, it just takes a team, you know, and that's kind of what doing stand-up on my own is just like I was had to generate a lot of the material. All the material, really. I had help, but I just really would crave that being with other people and creating together.
One of the reasons we started the CCA was because what you do in stand-up is so solitary. You know, you write alone. Often you travel alone. You're on stage alone. And you really need a community around you. You need a tribe. And we've discovered that the comedians that were out there in those days, I'm talking about 2002, we didn't know each other too much. Mm-hmm. And so we started the CCA to build that community and where we were able to pull for one another. But another reason we started is we really wanted to encourage the next generation. And that is one thing that you have done more than anyone. And yes. I share this with so many different people. You would see a talented person at the CCA or maybe another place, and immediately you would take them on the road with you as your opening act. And out of that came some of the top comedians today.
You mentored them.
You mentored them. And that really speaks to you in your servant's heart.
We found out that the best thing we could do for these up-and-coming comedians was to put them in front of people, you know, to...
Yeah.
You don't know. People ask me, how do you make a video go viral? I don't know.
We don't still not.
I don't know. You just have to put stuff out there and hopefully find these little subcultures around the internet that really dig what you're doing, and they start, you know, re-forwarding it.
And then it's timing too.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
It's such a combination.
Yeah, speaking into kind of the cultural zeitgeist.
Trying to have them catch a vision, the comics catch a vision. This is what's possible.
Yeah.
If you really connect with an audience, and it's out there, and we're just scratching the surface, you know?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, you found each other when you were youngins.
Yeah.
Early 20s.
And so we were 20.
Oh, see, now I saw a picture and you guys look like babies. I thought it was earlier than that.
Yeah.
What you mean?
We thought it was a playground connection.
Really? No.
Our children that are married have a playground connection. Yeah. They were in love since they were 12.
I want to know, did Tim use his mad comedy skills to woo you?
Huh. The first time we met was like in 1989 at New Year's Eve party with a bunch of singles. And then we never met again till the following New Year's Eve. And I was dating both times, I think. And then
she would get in a fight with him and then I would kind of console her.
Bad
and
deal.
You know, she'd be done they'd have a date or something, and then she'd come over to my house afterwards.
Yeah, because he was starting, we were becoming friends.
And because I was like, I had messed up. I was like, you know what? I need to figure out how women work. It's not that easy.
I'm still learning that.
With my sister's best friend. Mm-hmm. And they dated for about 4 months.
Yeah.
But then she was done with him talking about me, she said.
Oh, I love it.
That's great.
I love it. Yeah. Well, I don't know about you, Heather, but sometimes even when especially with Dan's career in comedy as well, you know, and being out on the road. I mean, you probably got this incessantly, but I used to have people come up like, what's it like, you know, being married to this funny guy? Is he like so such a crack up 24/7?
I swear I'm going to write a book called Is He That Funny at Home?
That's perfect.
That's what they always ask, right?
The way I make her laugh is not safe for not safe for work.
Oh, yeah. How he's dressed.
You have to get a little more manic and let's just say creative.
And he's dressed inappropriately, too.
Right. Dressed way inappropriately. Shocking.
It's funny.
Yeah. Tim, what was your earliest memory of, I'm funny, I can make people laugh?
Oh, man. It was Steve Martin, probably.
When you were little,
When I was fifth grade, I was Steve Martin in the school talent show. I was the host.
Ah.
And we had my little lines, on index cards in between the acts and stuff. And I had the arrow through the head and just, that was the first time a room full of strangers, you know, 300 or 400 people kind of gave me that feeling like, okay, what is that? How can I experience that again? Right? And it didn't happen until years later, because I was scared to get on the stage, to be honest. Once you get that first, okay, this is a joke that I came up with. It didn't even have to be a joke you came up with.
Yeah.
It could be performing something else. And, it was early on that, that experience is, it's just like none other, really.
And he was known for, when I met him, he was known for being able to mock like the coaches or a teacher and just, awesome there too.
Yeah. I had a architecture teacher, what do they call it? Drawing, the technical drawing class.
Drafting.
I don't know how to drafting. Nobody liked this guy. He was the detention teacher.
That says it all.
Yeah. They would graffiti his driveway. And I was the one guy, because I did his imitation in class, and he just loved it. He absolutely loved it. And so that was always, comedy was always a break the ice.
Yeah.
I felt control there, you know?
Yeah. I had the same thing. I had an older brother. He was 5.5 years older. And so all of his friends were 5.5 years older. So, I was this punk little brother that, those guys didn't want to include me to, if they were going to go down and play baseball or something. But I found at about 5 years old, similar to you, that I could make them laugh. And I could make them really crack up. And then they'd say, hey, bring your little brother. He's funny. And that's really what started in me, where it's like, I kind of have this comedy lens. I see things funny, and I can make other people laugh with it.
I think hearing Dan's story, that delivery sometimes starts, you start putting it together in high school. Now, he was a sketch comedy, so his brain works with groups. And there was a story about the worst teacher of all, and he was a music teacher, right?
Oh, and yeah. That was mean.
That was mean, but it is funny.
No, what I
tell it.
I was in junior high band, and junior high is when you are just the scum of the earth, you're just so mean to people and you don't even realize it. But we had this guy.
You weren't a bully.
I wasn't a bully. No. I was never a bully. But we had this sadly very senile music teacher. So what we did is there were no lights in the band room, because it was all insulated, and so it was soundproof. So there were no windows, and there were no lights. There were no windows, and people loved to turn the lights out on him. So he would keep a flashlight in his desk. So if you turn the lights out, he'd throw the flashlight. So what we did is we stole his flashlight. We went into one of the little practice rooms, which is about the size of a small bathroom. And then we had, I went up to him and I said, Mr. Stone, they need you in the practice room. And then just as he got over there, just as he's ready to open the door, we turned the lights in the classroom out. So he's standing there in pitch black. In the practice room, we shined his flashlight right in his face. We had a box of Good and Plenty, and we went, droo, 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 droo. And then the guy on the baritone sax went, wah, wah. And he thought a train was coming for him. And he took off running. Of course, it's pitch black, so he's tripping over desks and everything. And, it was so mean, but I've got to admit, it was hysterical.
Classic. So I think it's funny. I have... Todd, your older brother, who's to book you, right?
Yeah.
I love the story he tells that. I think the first gig he booked for you was 85th graders, right? Outdoors, little amp.
You know the funny part of that story? It was 8 o'clock at night, pitch black. Fire behind me. So they're just seeing the silhouette, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you do the thing, and it was a lot of fun. So they said, he has some CDs or whatever. We'll go up. And so we went up to this building right up the hill, opened the doors. AC, the most wonderful AC coolness. There was a perfect stage right there.
Amphitheater style.
It's like,
just nice and quaint, small, but an amphitheater.
Yeah.
Lighting. That's where we sold product.
With light, yes. We sold
product. It was the perfect stage. Perfect.
And they came up to you and said, I'd like the CD of the guy who was doing comedy tonight.
I don't know what he looks like.
I know what he looks like, yeah.
I have no idea what he looks like, but he sounded okay.
I think it would work.
Yeah. You know what I like about your story, Dan, is the box of Good and Plenties. I like that detail of the story.
Yeah,
it's not just a box of candy, Good and Plenties, because you know.
Get that sound.
That sound. Yeah.
Comedy is about the details.
Yeah.
You know, I do that in my comedy writing class. You've got to put a lot of adjectives. You got to be specific, because the more specific you are, and you do this the best, Tim, the more specific you are, the funnier it is.
They relate more.
Yeah, they relate to it.
More things, people like hot dog is funny, but Oscar Mayer Ballpark Frank is funny.
It's really funny.
Funnier.
Because you're like, we had Oscar Mayer Ballpark Franks. It's very simple, but it's just like, that's where that connection where people are going to laugh harder.
We're
in the same house. You
know? I know. Sometimes I think that about Brian Regan, because he'll just pull out a funny word. Oh. And I'm like, does he create the bit around that funny word? Like,
girth. Yeah. What is the weight and girth?
Yeah.
It's just a funny word.
And it's just
corner.
I'd like to ask him sometime.
It's like a trajectory for him, the word.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So about that time that you did this concert, I understand that this is like 2002. So now you are like jumping in full time. And what was that like for you guys, for both of you? Because you started touring and you had two little kids.
Yeah, and actually had three at that point when he started touring. But he also was working nights at McLean. So he was gone from 6 in the morning. 6 in the morning?
6 to 6 in the morning. Night shift.
Then he would come home and sleep. Then he was up a couple hours and went back to work. And then on the weekends, he was gone. And so for 18 months, that was hard. I remember one day, all of us were sick. My third kid was throwing up. Then I started to get sick, and I was this far from just calling and saying, you just got to take the first plane home. I can't do this.
Yeah.
But that was that only
time. I remember people kept seeing, we know you got a husband, because I kept showing up pregnant every, you know.
church. Yeah, church is like that.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Because
what does your husband do? Like, if they
Most of our touring was we'd fly out Thursday morning and come back like Sunday night or maybe Monday morning. You know, we would do three or four shows.
Well, there you go. I mean, it's like our schedule. We're home when everybody's working. We're working when everybody's home. It's like we're comedian. The only other people at the same hours are pastors and strippers. You know, and she's like. And I ain't hanging out with pastors, right?
Right. Hopefully.
That's right.
Finding a flow. I think it was hard to flow. When you're tired, you come home.
Yeah,
just it takes you a day to just reorient.
Yeah.
And not because she has to form a routine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes you feel like you're not in it, or you're messing it up, or you just don't. What time do we do certain things? That was tough to, you know, because sometimes she's like, do you have a show? You need to,
you need to go now.
Hanging out. What are you doing? Hey, what's up? What's going on here? What's all this? This is wrong. This is all wrong. Why? I wouldn't do it this way.
Well, now your career is really taking off,
mm-hmm.
and you get the two things that people are really seeking after is success and fame, but that brings some good and it can bring some bad to your life. What do you feel that it had an effect on you personally as well as the family?
The fame part of it, I think the blessing of that, because I saw myself as not as under the rare famous. And what that means is, you know, you go through the airport and you're like, oh, there's that guy from that thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll go up to him. They don't necessarily a fan. They're just, you're the dude. But everybody that would come up to me, they knew who I was. They, you know, they were sober.
Yeah,
right?
They were sober.
Mm-hmm.
Very respectful. And it was, and it didn't, it happened just enough where it was very pleasant, you know.
Yeah.
It was, being internet famous, I don't know. It's, it's I don't think it's as bad as being just famous.
Right.
Yeah. But the internet, you really can't understand what's going on. People would show up at these shows. I'm like, why are these people here? Why are so many people? I just didn't understand it.
You want to get big.
But I knew it worked. I knew something was, you know, you see million hits here, a million hits there, and a fraction of those people will come to a live show.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And we didn't understand it either. I mean, one time we were on the bus with the kids and my friend Michelle and her kids, and we waited for him after the concert. We were sitting outside of the sanctuary of this church on the table, just chit-chatting. And all of a sudden we see like a gathering of people and the line gets longer and longer. And she and I are like, wow, who's here? Like, is Kevin or, you know, something from old school stuff.
I don't is there remember. A post show?
Is there? And so we go follow the line, and my friend has the best laugh. She's the one you can hear on many of his old videos. Yeah. But we follow the line to the end, and she's like, oh my gosh, it's dead. Oh my gosh, are you kidding me? Okay, we were laughing.
Yeah. That is so funny. Well, you know, there is the challenges because you decided to go on the road. I mean, you're homeschooling your kids on the road.
Right. Yeah.
You know, how hard was that for you?
The homeschooling the kids on the road, I would say.
Well, just being on the road.
Oh, I thought for a long time it was easier. That kind of took some relief off, I think, our situation. And I think it was good for the kids. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, God had implanted in my heart when I lived in Wisconsin, back when I was like a teenager, that I thought, one day I want to homeschool. When I met Tim, that God had ordained that for a certain purpose, because then they would be at school during the week, and then he would be gone on the weekends. And so I was so grateful that we did homeschool at least 6th grade, 5th grade, and then go on the road with him.
Yeah. I can remember in particular a sweet message from you saying just kind of a bit of an SOS, a little bit of a drowning there, because when you talk about that success that happened to you, you know, you used to book him, and all of a sudden now there's people. Yeah. And in a way, you're losing your identity and what you can do for him.
Yeah, and meanwhile, 4th baby at that point. I remember that.
Yes, like, yes. And I remember Tim is in a position where he's telling you, I just need you to be with me. And you're thinking, what value is that?
Yes.
And, you know, and just we talked about there's no one that can fill that spot.
Yeah.
No one. He can be authentic, real himself. You are home to him. Yeah. And you just stepped in that so beautifully. And I remember you being concerned about your kids when you talk about the fame, that it was going to all go to their head, you know, that their dad's all that in a bag of chips. And you did something beautiful. You started assigning them as ambassadors for their dad, their role. They had jobs. Tim couldn't get to the merch table and thank each one of those and volunteer, but they could in his name.
Yep. And it was great. And I am so grateful for the advice that you did give me over the years. And actually, Dan, too, like some of your seminars at the conferences were just really like healing. And none of my friends couldn't understand that how that worked. Okay, I didn't really even understand. I was so grateful. Like there was times I remember just being back there rocking and feeding one of my babies. And I was just like, can I just call you every week?
Like, be my friend.
No. You didn't say no. Like, you're raising your own family. But you gave me so much advice anyway. It was so, so thank you for doing that. I really appreciate it.
I thank God for those intersections because you need that. That's kind of our tribe.
Yeah.
You know, someone who understands the wives of these guys.
Well, that's what I have totally learned just in recently is how it's okay to get help. Mm-hmm. It's okay.
Yep.
And we're for myself, for our marriage, for our family, but it's like now God is bringing us other people that are just going through the same
oh my
wall.
Goodness. Yeah. Cause we
together people like to people who have it together, but they don't, you know?
Right.
And
yes.
It's like, hey, I'm, you know, I got some money. I'm a nice guy. It's like, I can do this, right? Right? And it's like, well, not really. No. Well, in the pudding, right? So, it's okay to
ask
for help because people want to help, you know?
And it's because we went through this bout, which was really kind of a struggle for 5 years, and then 18 months was like the big push on it. And we're on the other side of that now. Thank you, Jesus. Because I was so grateful. Tim wanted to learn and he wanted to make it work. Because some people would be like, ah, screw this, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't have that attitude at all. So I'm grateful for that. Yeah. But even just yesterday, I got a text from somebody and I haven't talked to her probably in a year. Mm-hmm. And she just basically said a couple of lines about how like things aren't real good in her marriage right now. And I just said, hey, I'm just going to dive in here and I'm going to tell you what happened to me real quick. And is this what we're talking about? And she went, wow, wow, wow. Thank you so much. I don't even know who to turn to because of the position my husband's in and the things he does. I can't tell my friends. And mm-hmm. so she, you hit it right on the nose. And I just thought in that moment when she sent me the text, I was like, God, why would she send this text to me? It has to be because it's the same sort of deal. And so I just went for it.
It keeps happening.
Yeah, it keeps happening. Like with
Well, adulation can really mess with you. You know, I wrote an article on it called Who Wants to Be Famous? That we are not wired to receive that level of praise. Only God is, you know. Mm-hmm. And it messes with you because you look at other people and you think, are they appreciating comedian Tim or real Tim? And am I, your own identity, am I comedian Tim, what everybody is saying about what I do is for a living, or am I Heather's husband Tim, or the kid's father, a real person? And we get those all confused and messed up. And that's why it's so great to have reality checks of a counselor, a trusted friend, someone who's walked that walk, to help us kind of figure it all out.
Because, I mean, you're in a way, comes a little bit about control because, you know, you're managing the show in more ways than one, you know, what you're showing people.
Yeah.
And so, it just that false narrative to your life can just happen so quickly, especially when you go from exhaustion to home and crash and burn. Getting back to your first thing you were mentioning, so profound that God set apart this holy time for you guys. To get still.
Yep.
It's hard to rest. We're thinking sometimes we work harder during the time. Well, now this is the time I can really get it together. This is the time I can really, you know, start working, not, you know, focusing. Yeah. And it's like, nah, not really. Mm-hmm. No. That's okay to work. That's okay to be busy, and it's good to help and to do things and products. That's good, but rest is rest, and I really think we have a distorted version of what that means.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, the human version is not very restful. You know.
Well, and I would say for our marriage, and this isn't something that's for everybody's marriage, but for our marriage, one of the most beneficial things that Tim does right now is he gets up and he meditates and he just on the Lord and he prays. That has been the most restoring thing.
When you can get in a position where you're in control, you can set those things aside for a while and be quiet. God says he's the I am. He's right now. He's present. There's no past and future with God. We can't understand that, but that's what he says he is.
Mm-hmm. I am.
That's his essence, is presence.
Yeah.
Yes.
And when you can, and you get a position where you're lined up with, you know, with that, you're in the moment. It starts to just seep over into other parts of your life.
Yeah.
You're
you're more compassionate. You're more loving. You listen, you are more present with other people.
Yeah.
When I found that I'm performing, it's like, well, I want to be in this moment too. Cause that's when all the fun thing, that's when life happens, right?
Yeah.
You can do it 1,000 times, the same joke 1,000 times, but it could be just that one time where if you're present, you can, something new happens. And plus your audience deserves it. You know, they deserve you being there.
I've heard, or actually read writers talk about this, and they talk about it as a holy dance of two trinities. And they talk about the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit operating in this perfect united dance together. And then there's the body, soul, and spirit of a human being.
Yeah.
And we enter into that dance.
Yeah.
And God orchestrates it beautifully. So it's like you're saying, we're not just our minds. We're body, soul, and spirit. And that's what I love about what you're saying, that you have that quiet time to slow down and listen attentively to the Lord, which is hard to do, man. I think of all the million things I want to do today, and it's hard to silence yourself and listen to the Lord. But when I do that, and when you're talking about, it brings all those pieces into harmony.
You know, and I can tell you for me, and Heather, you could probably chat in this about this as well. Some of those moments came, at a difficult cost for us when we both went through cancer.
Yes.
Because life, you're sequestered. Life gets smaller.
Yes.
And the beauty of that place is that you own your theology, who God says you are.
Yes.
And what I can't imagine might have been difficult. Dan wasn't touring at the time that I was going through chemo.
That's when I was at CBS.
But Tim, you were. What was that like for you guys?
Well, I feel like most of the pressure would be on him because, as you know, when you have chemo treatments, you're out. So I'm out. And I feel like I have sadness now sometimes because of what my children have had to experience.
Oh. Yes.
And that feels like something Satan came to steal, kill, and destroy. But I know that God is victory, and he will bring, tenfold back for these things. But I thought it was really cool. One of my friends said the most amazing thing when he first got the tour buses, and now I was better and over cancer. And I took all of my kids and I bring them on the bus. She said something on that trip I'll never forget. She goes, think about this, Heather. Everything that was taken from you, like when the locusts came and destroyed all the crops, God is replenishing back with these times on the bus. And I was like, Jesus, like that is such a replenishing of all that time that was stolen.
Well, talking about replenishing and talking about kids, you're a little bit distanced. They're in Dallas, but you have, a year ago, you joined us in the ranks of grandparents.
Yes.
Woo!
Yes, we love it.
Yeah, bring them on. More the better.
Yeah.
Aren't they amazing?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've seen your cuties. You have some cuties over there.
We'll get pictures. Yeah, we'll send you the picture now on the phone. You hold your finger on it. You'll get a little movement.
Yeah.
And it's just a little movement. You're like, oh.
Yeah, bring them on. We have seven. And man, they're the joy of our lives. But anxious to see when more and more come to the Hawkins family.
Yeah, Olivia, married now, so
yeah,
she's more of a control. Hey, let's just she's got it scheduled.
Truly, God's timing.
You know, setting aside the fandom and that, but we know the value of laughter. God says that it's like a medicine. It does. It's good for the heart. What are some of the most meaningful comments that you've maybe heard through the years, either after a concert or someone who meets you, something you said, just kind of how they maybe lighten their load?
Yeah.
I have one personally from when you did a show early on. And a lady came up to him afterwards and she said, I just think of Philemon 7 when I think about what you do. And she was kind of like a New Yorker, real kind of brash kind of lady, but it's cool, like her presentation. She goes, you come and you refresh the souls of the saints. And I was like, that's so simple and so amazing. Yeah. And that
we grabbed that one.
We grabbed it and I wrote it on all the walls of our houses except for this one. But it's just kind of been a reminder even for our kids to go, you know what? Sometimes our role is to refresh the souls of the saints. Maybe that's what our thing is, and
you do
ways to refresh others. And we've gotten off track sometimes because of cancer or little things, but for the most part, that's what we strive for.
Yeah. There's too many to say, really. Most of them are just people who are going through serious illness.
Yeah.
People will show up 1 year and they'll be gone the next year. You'll see them, they're going through treatments or whatever. And just being a part of that in any way is too much. And it really, that's part of the cost, really. I mean, there's an emotional cost. When somebody, you're about to go on stage and somebody says, oh, there's a kid with this going on, this life-threatening deal, and he's going to be here. And you're like, okay. And you go out and do your show. You're like, well, your brain does something with that. It has to process that. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's more of an emotional cost that that you're like, okay, that's...
Well, you walked through it with that one kid that did die.
Oh, Zach, up in New York, there's a kid, he's a 13-year-old kid, you know, the brain.
For a while.
He had a brain tumor that grew, and in 1 year, he's gone. And
but he's getting videos that the parents request.
Hanging out with him, going out to lunch, and I think it's too much, even with cancer and stuff, it's too much to process at one time. I think God made us where we can, in little bits, we can kind of figure things out and become educated and get used to it.
Right. And I think comedy is a little bit of a pressure valve. For a season, a short season sometimes, but it releases a little bit of the pressures of life or what we're walking through.
So Heather, I want to ask you, for any wife out there whose husband's funny and he wants to go this direction, do you have any word of advice for any wife of an aspiring comedian?
Get a divorce. Get
out now.
Run,
get out now.
Pack your bags.
Pack your bags. No, the one thing of advice I would definitely give is you better be sold out to the idea. I was definitely sold out from the beginning that he should do comedy when we were friends and when we were first dating. And we all, like a group of us, pushed him on stage at the Funny Bone. So I was behind it 100%. Because what's going to happen if you're not, and if you don't think it's a good idea, you're going to get bitter. And that didn't cause the bitterness for him doing it, just other things that kind of crept up along the way. So I don't know how to advise
that's fair. I'm very thankful for that. I never felt like I was breaking away. It was always something I was being either pushed or supported in it. And from her, from my, you know, my parents, everybody. I mean, they were my biggest fans.
Yeah.
So I would say, if you're going out there, like she said, totally sold out to it, be their fan.
What's so great when you're younger too and they're doing it is that love is blind, right? So when he go up and he bomb, you're like, those people are so dumb. They just don't get it. But then you learned over time.
That's right. They were idiots, sweetheart. You were dumb.
just blatantly lie to them.
I love that.
I'm serious. I actually thought that too because, like, you know, you're younger and you think that, right? And then over time, you go, wait a minute, maybe you should reword that. And then over time, even longer, I'd say, because obviously his act was good, I was staying home with the kids and supporting this whole idea. And you're sticking your stomach out too much or, you know, just trying to make it look better on stage.
Yeah.
And he didn't like it sometimes, but I was like, but this is what part of it is. Of course I think you're funny, or I wouldn't be staying home with four kids.
She did say that. She's and it's very, some minor details, just, you're scratching your belly a lot.
Yeah, it's like,
I don't scratch my belly.
I think that's funny.
Video, and I'm like, I'm scratching my belly.
Yeah, just little minutiae. I mean,
kind of this stuff.
Like, it's funny.
And I was like, but
not all the bits.
That would be another piece of advice, is to say that your feedback, their feedback, her and my kids' feedback is better than anybody's. And they're not even comedians. Because
we're funny.
They're not here for fake laughs.
I know.
Like, if it's genuinely funny, though, yes. And I'll come to them, usually not with the joke itself, but with a concept, like with the kids. Hey, kids, does this make sense, this idea? Like, I can relate to that. And that's good. That's a good start, you know?
Yeah. What a great dad, because you're giving space for them even to speak into it, right?
Yeah.
So they're owning part of this.
Yeah. And it's not
even, funny.
It's not pandering. You're like, especially with that age group audience, you know, where they have their finger on the pulse of that.
Right.
And I know throughout my career, Peggy's been my best and most honest critic. And my fragile ego hates hearing it. But when I recalibrate, it's like, wow, I'm so glad she told me, because like you were mentioning scratching your belly, you know, it's like, I didn't know I did that. I'm glad she told me, you know. So
Well, there you go. I want to say before too, it's really about what you feed. What you feed grows. And the less you can feed your ego is a very hungry beast.
Yeah.
Yes.
You gotta starve that sucker. Because it does nothing for you.
No.
Your ego tells you need the fame and you need all the praise and all this stuff. The sooner you can get rid of that, the more you're gonna be happier, but you're gonna be better at ministry for one thing.
Yeah.
And you're going to be better at home.
And I have one little advice thing too, because if that person goes out to do comedy and they do make it big, God had instilled just a simple idea where I made my ringtone a song that says, I don't want to gain the whole world and lose my soul. That seems so, you know, ambiguous or whatever, but it was like just a simple reminder that every time, and it's still on there. So it's been on there for 15 years, that was a trigger in my mind. It fed my mind, like, no matter what this takes, wherever this takes me to, I don't want to gain the whole world and lose my soul. And I'm just so grateful because it was just something that didn't well up in me or make it like a, oh yeah, well, do you know who, you know, do you know whose wife I am? Like, that never crossed my mind. And I'm glad that I gave that little tidbit.
And I am so grateful for Dan has been, he's made space and for me to be able to kind of blossom and even step into things I never would have because he has welcomed me. Yeah. And made me feel valued and heard. And that is something we've had to grow in our relationship, and it's been the best part of it.
Yeah. Well, we want to thank you so much for being with us. And we are so excited about where God's taking you because, you know, the sky's the limit and the Lord, we see it. God's doing so much in each of you personally, in your marriage, in your family, now grandparents. And we're excited to keep following you as friends, but also admirers from a distance of where the Lord's going to have you land for the next season.
And you'll be more detailed about what God is doing in our lives.
We'll be praying.
Where is God taking us? Can you seriously tell us?
Well, we're going to hold out till Disneyland.
Oh, so yeah.
Our next dinner.
Yeah.
That's we'll have the roadmap.
That's what makes life fun, yeah?
That's right.
That's right. No GPS.
Yeah. The uncertainty.
That's right.
Faith.
Yeah, man.
Well, it's great seeing you.
We love you guys.
Love you too.
Love you.
I hope to see you soon.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, that was great.
And it's a wrap.
Thank you for joining us for Life Off Screen with Dan and Peggy Ruppel. Life Off Screen is produced by Master Media International. Our technical director is Jason Rugg. Please subscribe to the Life Off Screen YouTube channel or subscribe to the Life Off Screen podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love to hear from you. You can leave your comments in the comment section. And to find out more about Master Media, go to mastermedia.com. Thanks again for joining us. Hope to see you next time.